Hello there, film lovers and whippersnappers. Welcome to a grumpy old man edition of Film Sociology here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Socey. The show is available as a podcast and is it still available on iTunes? iTunes is still a thing. So anyway, that is out there as well. Why am I being a grumpy old man? Well, as a married, white, straight male who's pushing 50, you know, the oppressed, I saw something this week, and this is not going to be a gigantic rant, but sometimes it's just all in the timing. The one of the big films that opened this week is Yesterday. Of course, the fairy tale of what happens when one guy survives a global blackout and is the only one that is aware of the music of the Beatles. So we'll get to that in a second. I think I'm good on. I don't need any more films right now about films about music based on my record collection. Here's what we've had, and what I mean by that is in the last year. Here's what we've had. We had last summer, of course, A Star Is Born, which all it had to do was be better than the last Star Is Born, and it was. Come at me, old friends. Or if I believe Lou Harry called it the best first half of a film of 2018, and he's not entirely wrong on that. But a splendid film, and I think if it didn't make number 10 on my best of, it was right on the cusp. Then we had Bohemian Rhapsody, the cinematic greatest hits collection. And if it brings more people interested in the music of Queen, then I'm all for it. Good performance by Rami Malek wasn't my pick for Best Actor. And good energy. And yes, the Live Aid stuff was fun. Then we have, well, and then I saw Amazing Grace, which I still think as of right now, the time of this recording, is still the best film of 2019. Then we had Rocket Man, which wasn't so much a greatest hits package as it was a Vegas review, kind of an attempt to do a twist of the biopic, although not twisted enough. Good lead performance. The musical numbers when it was a musical was fun. So, and now we have Yesterday. So I know we're not supposed to praise or critique a film for what it is not, although I have a tendency to do that, or we go in with a certain sense of dread or excitement, and it brings us down. This film is directed by Danny Boyle, whose work most of the time I like, and its screenplay is done by Richard Curtis, which I think might be the problem. Richard Curtis is the gentleman who, of course, he gave us Four Weddings and a Funeral, Notting Hill, Love Actually. I really, really wanted John Carney to write and direct this film. And if you don't know John Carney, he's done three of the best films about music in the last, gosh, it's been over a decade, Once, Begin Again, and Sing Street. And I think he would have done something a little more. It's not a bad film. Am I burnt out? Kind of like superhero movies. Am I burnt out on films about classic rock or dad rock? Maybe. It's a low-hanging fruit of a film. One of the things it does capture, and it does well, but I think it could have gone more of the idea of listening to the Beatles for the first time. I remember my daughter listening to the Beatles for the first time. I remember myself listening to the Beatles for the first time, and that's hard to capture that. excuse me. And there's a case in point where it's kind of a Saturday Night Live sketch, which we'll get to in a minute, of the record executives talking. So the story is there's a global outbreak. There's a global shutdown for it's like the power went out. And this struggling musician played by Himesh Patel suffers an accident, is in the hospital. When he gets out, realizes that nobody has any idea about the Beatles. So he's able to pass off the music of the Beatles as his own, and it causes him to become a global sensation. But yeah, there is the obligatory meeting with the record executives who say things like, you know, Sgt. Pepper is a silly title and it's too long and it's too weird. And along the way, he has his best friend, doesn't know he's in love with her, but doesn't do anything about it, played by Lily James. And as happens in many music films, In order to get bigger, you have to get bigger management. And you get an agent in this played by Kate McKinnon. I love Kate McKinnon. She has nothing to do in this. This was a role she could do in SNL in her sleep. I think if this means she gets to work with a different level of director, then I guess that's the purpose of it. But you had a Ferrari and you only took it to the end of the driveway and back. Patel and James work nice together, and I should that relationship, albeit their performances are good, even if the story is tired of the girl who is left behind while he's out becoming a rock star. the songs themselves are not, they're kind of played as is. Now, a lot of it is with the lead, it's just him on guitar and him on piano, so I guess it's not completely like a note by note recording of it, although arrangements are the same. And I guess that's the other thing, is do you dare try to adjust a song by the Beatles? You're talking to a man whose first slow dance was to the original Hey Jude, and I still think Wilson Pickett's Hey Jude is superior. There could have been more of that, at least more experiments with that. When there is a performance on a rooftop, yes, they do go there, but not at the place that you think. That there is kind of a sped up, it almost sounded like Green Day version of Help. So if you like the Beatles and you want to, and that's the other thing with the whole aspect of the world not knowing the Beatles, the less you think about the fantasy element of this, the easier it's going to be. Music nerds like myself are going to be nitpicky and look for flaws in its logic. So the less you think about that and the more, so if you're, it felt like at times Notting Hill meets The Voice. It felt like a movie that was created not by executives, but by a talent show at times. And speaking of Notting Hill and Richard Curtis, Joel Fry plays Rocky, the sidekick, which is right out of the Richard Curtis playbook as far as not as bright sidekicks, but they stand by you no matter how ridiculous they are. The Richard Curtis films, while you usually have good leads and you also have a strong bench of supporting players, and in the case of the sidekick and the parents, they're okay, but it's not like other Curtis ensembles. So, of course, at the screening of this, everybody enjoyed it much, much more than I did. So I wanted more out of this. It reminds me of the film Big Night, where you have the the brothers played by Stanley Tucci and Tony Shalhoub, who run a traditional Italian restaurant, no two starches with a dinner, and they're not doing great business. And down the street is the one with the checker tablecloths and the meatballs and the loud music, and it's going over like gangbusters. You know, do you want an evening of original music, or do you just want a bar band playing stuff that you're familiar with and can go woo? My imaginary garage band, by the way, is the Wooing Caucasians. So it's a Beatles tribute band more than the Beatles film itself. It's Beatles 101 when I wanted advanced studies. So there you go. It's out there. Go check that out if you want. It's not a bad film. It's just disappointing for me. And now I sound like a parent. With that in mind, I want to mention some other music-oriented films that have come out recently that are online, on video, that sort of thing, that I think I liked more than I did like more than this. There's a documentary, and of course, the thing with a lot of documentaries is how informed do you become? I'll give a point. There on Blu-ray from MVD Visual is a documentary called Bachman, which was about Randy Bachman, the man who gave us the founder of Guess Who, as well as Bachman Turner Overdrive. And obviously I know the songs from those bands, and that was about it. I didn't know about him, and it tells his story. Starting in his younger days, I believe it was in Winnipeg, and then the Guess Who, and then Bachman Turner Overdrive. And you forget, it's between those two bands, that's somewhere in the world, those songs are being played on the radio or by a bar band or on satellite. So Randy Bachman's left his mark on this planet and in the music world. So I learned more about him, and I'm glad I did. Great footage as well. Also great footage from Martin Scorsese, his second documentary about Bob Dylan, Rolling Thunder Review, a Bob Dylan story by Martin Scorsese about Dylan's 1975 Rolling Thunder Review tour. And it's this kind of carnival medicine show, people that were involved in it, everyone from Joan Baez and Roger McGuinn, Ramblin' Jack Elliott, interviews with Sam Shepard, Sharon Stone, who I didn't realize had a connection with Dylan, and since she was directed by Scorsese in Casino, that was a nice turnaround. And here's a rarity, honest, thoughtful interview with Dylan. And, you know, here's a guy, if you remember, after Don't Look Back, you couldn't trust the thing, I think Dylan would say in an interview, or it was hard to. And he's just very open, and obviously he likes Scorsese for him to do a second documentary about his work. So at the very least, there's that, as well as really cool concert footage from that tour. Also on Netflix, The Black Godfather, about the life of Clarence Avant, who is a mentor, behind-the-scenes wheeler dealer in music, film, TV, and, yes, politics. So a lot of famous talking heads, everybody from Diddy to presidents, Jim Brown, Jamie Foxx has some fun interview time here. And how much, and of course, the cool visual of almost like DNA of who Clarence touched and how he connected this musician with that athlete, with this politician. It's a really cool look at a man behind the scenes who, for the most part, kept behind the scenes until this film. also out on Netflix, and this is especially one I've heard about. I have one of their albums, but I finally got to hear their story. And I've played them before in the Blues House Party. Satan and Adam, the story of a young white harmonica player who meets a black guitarist playing on the streets of Harlem in the late 80s. They strike up a musicianship that winds up becoming a friendship. They wind up touring the country, touring the globe. And at the time when Harlem, this is pre-gentrification, but Adam got to tell his story about Mr. Satan, the man, and trying to find out how much he could behind the scenes and how he got there. But it's a really nice balanced story about the two musicians and really cool raw blues music, which, of course, I enjoy. So all of those are worth checking out. Also on Film Movement Classics, and this was a precursor to the film A Better Tomorrow, but John Woo's military action film Heroes Shed No Tears is now out on Blu-ray. It's a Chinese commando force who capture who's enlisted by the Thai government to capture a drug lord and bring him in for justice. At a film that's not even 90 minutes, there is a lot of walking in between the gunplay. There's a lot of walking and gathering of new people, including a French journalist and this soldier's family comes with him along the way. It's from executive producer Raymond Chow, and it's interesting to see early Woo. This is a low-budget film by, compared to stuff like The Killer and, of course, the stuff that Woo would do in Hollywood. But, there's plenty of gunplay, and there's plenty of explosions, and there's some of the slow-motion stuff that Woo would be recognized for later on. No doves in this one. So if you're tired of John Woo and doves, you can check out this film. But it's at the time when this was being done, it felt more of a homage, ripoff, what have you, of Sam Peckinpah's slow motion action sequences before he started to polish his camera work and kind of make it his own in films like Hard Boiled and The Killer. But it's an interesting look at this man's early career and the peaks and valleys that he's gone through. So anyway, that is out on video as well. Just a reminder, at Keystone Arts this weekend, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Friday night and Saturday night. I got to talk to Emma about that. July 5th and 6th, The Dark Crystal. July 12th and 13th, The Room, which means I'll be playing my interview with Tommy Wiseau very, very soon. July 19th and 20th, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. July 26th and 27th, Jurassic Park. August 2nd and 3rd, Princess Mononoke. August 9th and 10th, Donnie Darko. August 16th and 17th, Eraserhead. And August 23rd and 24th, Pulp Fiction. Now we get to some dead people we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. And I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to mention this on the show last week, but Italian director Franco Zeffirelli died on June 15th at the age of 96, a man who did theater and film and opera, and his 1958's Camping was his first film, and then became known in Europe as well as Hollywood with the 1967 film version of The Taming of the Shrew with Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, 1 year after Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. I remember showing this to my daughter Emma when she was getting into Shakespeare movies in her single digits, and her saying, Dad, I know I'm not supposed to use this word, but can I hate this guy? Referring to Richard Burton during the wedding sequence. Of course, 1 year later, he would make for many the definitive film of Romeo and Juliet from 1968 with Olivia Hussey. This was, of course, a big deal because you had teenagers playing Romeo and Juliet, not Norma Shearer and Leslie Howard like they did decades before. This is one a million English classes have watched this film. I know I showed it to when I did directed Romeo and Juliet for middle schoolers. Like every other teacher, you show them highlights of it, and of course you had to cover the bare bottoms during the post-love scenes. So anyway, but it's also a very, very good version. 1972's Brother, Sun, Sister, Moon, yes. 1977's TV miniseries Jesus of Nazareth. The Champ from 1979, yes, Ricky Schroeder made you cry. Endless Love from 1981, which I need to revisit because I didn't think Brooke Shields at that time was worth burning a house over. The film version of La Traviata in 1982, the 1986 film version of the opera Otello, which if you watch the documentary Electric Boogaloo about the story of Canon Films, there's an interview with Zeffirelli talking about how he thought the Canon guys were the best studio he had ever worked with. This was a part of the art house deal that Canon had for a while. It was, if you want the new Charles Bronson movie, you have to take Otello. If you want the new Chuck Norris movie, you have to take the new John Cassavetes film. In 1990, he got to do a film version of Hamlet with Mel Gibson, of course, as Hamlet. Glenn Close, who apparently was, 3 years old when she had Hamlet playing Gertrude, and of course Helena Bonham Carter as Ophelia, and a really good supporting cast of actors behind them. Sparrow in 1993, Jane Eyre in 1996, and Tea with Mussolini in 1999, and Callas Forever in 2002. So thank you, Franco Zeffirelli. We appreciate your work. Also passing away recently, Sue Bernard, who has 14 film and TV credits, including Necromancy, as well as The Mao Game, Teenager, The Killing Kind, 40 Graves for 40 Guns, That Tender Touch, The Finks, The Witchmaker, Stranger in Hollywood. None of these sound familiar. She played Beverly Cleveland Fairchild on General Hospital. Well, in 1965, she played Linda in the Russ Meyers classic Faster Pussycat Kill Kill. So you should go rent that, because you should. And then two classic that guys, two Hall of Fame that guys, I think, Billy Drago and Max Wright. And these are two guys that you each has their own film that they kind of recognize them, that they first learned about them or acknowledge, oh, it's that guy. In the case of Drago, he became really huge for The Untouchables as playing Frank Nitti. And of course, Max Wright was the dad in Alf, and hopefully more people are looking at his other work besides that show. But what's cool is, what did they do before you recognized them? So in the case of Billy Drago, who did over 100 films and TV, films like Wind Walker, Cutter's Way as a garbage man, Pale Rider, he was the deputy in Pale Rider, Invasion USA, another Canon film, and it was in a Mike and the Mechanics video, Vamp, Hunter's Blood, and then got to be in The Untouchables, Hero and the Terror, Freeway, True Blood, China White, Prime Sus, and he became like the kind of B-movie villain, Delta Force 2, Lady Dragon 2, a lot of films that went straight to video, but he was working, so cool for him on that. And in the case of Max Wright, before Alf, he was He was in The Last Embrace, played Joshua Penn in Bob Fosse's All That Jazz, was in the Alan Arkin film Simon, played Floyd Dell in Warren Beatty's film version of Reds. Excuse me. Was the floor manager in The Sting 2. Let's move on. Fraternity Vacation. Yeah, he was in that. Touch and Go, Soul Man. And then, of course, yeah, we get into Alf. So a lot of work. The Shadow, Grumpier Old Men. What I really was really cool was seeing him play Robin Starveling in the 1999 film version of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And in that same year, doing the film Snow Falling on Cedars. So anyway, here's to you, gentlemen. So that's about it, ladies and gentlemen. I short and crabby and sweet, and there you go. So words to live by, Soylent Green's people, Zardoz has spoken. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Go hear some music from your collection, and maybe they'll make a film out of it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.